Cooper Kupp, fade Mark Andrews at your own risk. The Bengals, they're pretty good too. Welcome into Fantasy Football Today, DFS, on Tuesday, December 28th. Frank Sample joined, as always, by Mike McClure and Sia Najat. Today on the podcast, we're going to recap Week 16, take a look at our cash and GPP lineups. Who won our FFT DFS contest? What did that lineup look like? Who came close to winning of us three? We'll talk about that as well. Are you serious? The most ridiculously tilting moments from this past week, early week 17 pricing, which features a 14-game main slate. No more Thursday night football, no Saturday games this week. So we've got a lot to talk about, a lot of players, a massive slate here in week 17. What is going on, gentlemen? Shout out to you guys for being all over the Ravens-Bengals game, especially Mike. I mean, when we threw that to you, you said it was by far your favorite game on the slate. So that was a job well done by you, Mike. How was week 16?
Not bad. I wish I had more of that game, especially on DraftKings. I had most of it on FanDuel, but was happy to see it come through. Had some Johnson, had a little Mark Andrews on the other side, but unfortunately, all the Jamar Chase, did not get any T. Higgins somehow, and that was unfortunate. Overall, still a good week. Cashed in cash games, cashed a couple tournaments. Didn't lose any money. So, it was a great week. I forgot. I won the showdown slate on the other day, Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
I tied with, you know, like 7,000 of my right. closest friends, but, you know, good. You know, I don't even know what it was. 50X in the entry. So it worked out well, but definitely still frustrated from the lack of T. Higgins on the main slate.
Yeah. All right. Look, profit is good. We're not going to complain about profit, of course. See what's going on with you. We'll talk about the main slate a little bit more later on, but just a preview, I guess. Well, no, before we even get to that, how was your week 16? How was it for you?
It was really good. I mean, it can always be better. A couple tweaks here and there, and I genuinely would have had a takedown. We'll see one of my GPP lineups, and it's mostly thanks to Mike, honestly, because while I did like that Cincinnati Ravens game, he was so emphatic about it on our Thursday show that I was like, all right, let me make sure I have this in some of my GPP builds. So it ended up, I went from, you know, 4 digits to potentially 5 digits to still a pretty good return when it all got shaken out. So it was a great week 16, and I'm really looking forward to the next few weeks because I definitely think there's still a pile of money to be won, and I feel like we're starting to narrow our focus on the right games.
Yeah, we've got two more complete slates here, week 17 and, of course, week 18. Week 18 is always a little bit unique because there's teams that are out of it and, you know, maybe they're not playing their star players or, you know, they're shutting people down at that point. So it's going to be interesting to talk about week 18, but we'll talk about it when we get there. But before we get to that, week 17, I mentioned it's a 14 game main slate. We'll talk about it much more later on. But Mike, how do you handle a slate this big when we have this many games? Because it feels like for a while now we've been dealing with like 10, 11 game slates, and all of a sudden we have 14 games that gives us more players, more games to possibly choose from. How does it change the process, if at all, for you?
I mean, the biggest thing it changes for me is I just start way later in the week, especially this year because we have so many moving pieces with the COVID situations. But it's not a lot different for me because on a week like this, like especially you look at the spreads across the board, I'm pretty confident there are 7 games that I won't have interest in a single player in. They will not be in my player pool. So for me, I actually kind of like that. If I can confidently cross out those games, I'm more than happy to let the rest of the field potentially select players from those games if I'm confident that I don't want them. So I actually like these kind of weeks. The only advice there is just be prepared to throw everything away and start over because there are so many games that any particular player getting ruled out Friday, Saturday, or even Sunday morning can definitely flip everything that you're doing very significantly when you have that many games.
Yeah, especially this season too. I mean, everything that's going on with COVID right now, a record 106 players placed on the COVID list on Monday, and of course more coming out on Tuesday. And I have a feeling by Thursday's podcast, we'll be talking about a few more players being added to the COVID list as well. So, all right, more games means more games, obviously, to cross off the list. So I think that's a good piece of advice, and we'll get to the Week 17 main slate a little bit later on. But let's start with our cash game lineup review. The cash line right around 137, 138 points over on DraftKings, up from previous weeks, which makes sense with all the value available on this slate. At quarterback, Matthew Stafford was the highest owned QB and was quite bad, under 10 points over on DraftKings. Jalen Hurts, 30%, he was fine. Justin Herbert, 17% owned. He got there, but more on him in a little bit later on. At running back, we knew there was a big four. Justin Jackson was 80% owned, which made sense. He was the cheapest of that group, 4,200 on DraftKings. James Robinson, 75% owned. Feel so bad for the guy. I mean, torn Achilles. He goes down early in that game. It obviously wrecked a lot of DFS lineups, but I feel so bad for the guy. Ronald Jones, 37% owned. Alexander Mattison, 32% owned on the slate. At wide receiver, Cooper Kupp, 87% owned. Fade him at your own risk. Makes sense with all the value on the slate. Antonio Brown, 84% owned. We were talking about him beforehand. Saw over 50% of the target share this past week from Tom Brady, which made sense considering all the injuries Tampa Bay was dealing with. Joshua Palmer was 38% rostered with Mike Williams and Jalen Guyton out. And then at tight end, we had Dallas Goedert and Rob Gronkowski, both around 25-26% owned. Both were letdowns. Cole Kmet was fine at 17% owned. Chalk defenses were also quite bad this past week. Let's start with Sia's lineup here. And he put up 167.58. And you had the dreadful Matthew Stafford to Cooper Kupp connection here. You had Alexander Mattison, Justin Jackson, and James Robinson at running back, Antonio Brown, T. Higgins, and Cole Kmet at wide receiver and tight end. And then you had the Bengals DST as well. Sia, kudos to you, man. I played T. Higgins in GPPs. I didn't even consider him in cash. So you get him at just 6% ownership, goes off, has this massive game over 40%, over 40 points over on DraftKings, and just career highs across the board. So how'd you get there?
Yeah, so to be honest with you, T. Higgins was sort of one of the last people I inserted in my cash lineup. I mean, there were guys I definitely needed to have. Justin Jackson, Cooper Kupp, those were definitely two of them. Kmet was one of them, believe it or not, because I needed to jam in a tight end that was going to be cheap with the way I was going to build. Of course, Antonio Brown and James Robinson were also very necessary in the build. So when it all kind of shook out, once you add Alexander Mattison, which I could have, you know, put in Ronald Jones, for example, and really maybe gotten off of T. Higgins and paid up for like a Jamar Chase or somebody like that, or maybe like a Stephon Diggs, who also would have been low rostered. But T. Higgins seemed like a pretty easy play considering how much money I had left over, especially when you consider, and we brought this up on the Thursday show, even the Tuesday show, but Mike was very specific about the Baltimore Ravens defense and just how injured and banged up they were and just the availability of players. It was so sparse that you kind of knew a couple Cincinnati Bengals were going to have a really good game. It was just a matter of choosing which ones. I certainly could have chosen Jamar Chase, but again, because of my financial limitations, I ended up with T. Higgins. So it wasn't me necessarily choosing T. Higgins over Jamar Chase. It was just that from a salary standpoint, that's where I needed to go. So I liked them both. I just ended up with T. Higgins.
Yeah, talk to me more about the running back decision here, because we all knew that there was four running backs and you had to fade one of them, and you wind up fading Ronald Jones here. And that's the biggest difference between your lineup and mine, is that I faded Madison. I had Ronald Jones in that spot, and then I went up to Keenan Allen instead of T. Higgins. So that's basically the 2v2 in our lineup right there. How did you come to the decision to fade Ronald Jones on the slate?
Yeah, so for me, in most of my lineups, cash and GPP, I was going to play Justin Jefferson or Alexander Mattison. In my GPPs, I ended up playing a lot more Justin Jefferson just because I knew Mattison would be pretty popular. But in my cash games, I just kind of settled on. I liked Mattison and Ronald Jones kind of the same, believe it or not. And given that, and given their price difference, you would think I just would have landed on Ronald Jones. But here, I just kind of went with what I thought was maybe the safer play, and I took Mattison. So there wasn't any sort of particular rhyme or reason to that. It was just there were four running backs I wanted to play in cash. I could only play three.
All right, let's move on over to Mike's cash game lineup here, where he puts up 151.72. And Mike, this has your fingerprints all over it, man. Classic GPP cash lineup build, if I've ever seen one. Patrick Mahomes with Tyreek Hill in at the flex. You have the connection there. Alexander Mattison and Justin Jackson at running back. Cooper Kupp, Antonio Brown, Joshua Palmer at wide receiver, CJ Uzama at tight end, and the Falcons DST. Palmer was such a smart play, such a great play. I think, you know, whenever Mike Williams or Keenan Allen is out, we're going to be talking about Joshua Palmer. If you have this guy in dynasty leagues, you should feel very good about it. But how did you wind up on the Chiefs stack over, you know, maybe getting another one of those chalk running backs in, whether it's a Ronald Jones or a James Robinson at the flex, and then maybe you spend up at tight end or something like that? How'd you get to this specific build?
Yeah, so it wasn't a decision that I made personally. It was straight from my projections. And what happened was, is Tyreek Hill got cleared, Travis Kelce did not. And that raised the projection on both Mahomes and Tyreek Hill to the point where it ended up being a spot where they got in lineups here. And that's really all that happened on that. Obviously, very frustrating game from Tyreek Hill. Came out there, basically played hard for two series in the game. Basically sat, didn't play the rest of the game for the Kansas City Chiefs. They didn't need him. It was pretty clear that they didn't need him. I don't think that they, you know, if the game were competitive, he certainly would have had a bigger role. He certainly would have been out there. But I wasn't expecting quite the blowout that we got. I wasn't expecting such a small role from him. Other than that, yeah, I mean, I love Palmer. I've played him pretty much every time that one of those guys has been out this year. And fortunately, ran pretty hot on it, getting that late TD. You know, at his price point, without the TD, the score would have been okay. Like, it wouldn't have been just total disaster, but definitely ran hot there. But as you mentioned, yeah, total. It's exactly what I do every single week. I get the heavy target volume guys, which should have been Tyreek Hill, Cooper Kupp, and Antonio Brown. Play the favorite quarterback that I'm projecting to be under 10% owned, and rinse and repeat. So that's what we do every week here.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill, I don't think we could have seen, you know, the Chiefs destroying the Steelers the way that they did. And it seems like on paper, you know, it wasn't a bad play. I mean, look, he was 28.5% owned. So other people were thinking along those similar lines as you there, Mike. Where are you at just in general on the Chiefs at this point? Because we've talked about this for really the past month, maybe 6 weeks, where they're performing very well from an NFL perspective, mainly because their defense has been awesome. And there's been some games mixed in here where, you know, Mahomes has had some big games, but not nearly as consistently as we've seen in the past. So, Mike, where are you at just in general on the Chiefs offense right now? Are you going to be looking at them again here in week 17 against the Bengals with a 49-point total? It's probably going to be pretty popular.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, initial runs, I've got 3 to 4 Chiefs in lineups. I fully expect them to absolutely carve up that Cincinnati defense personally. It's just going to come down to, you know, what do we get? What kind of COVID news shakes out? I will say on the Tyreek Hill thing, a lot like you guys playing Matthew Stafford, like if you had told me the Chiefs put up 35, 36 points, Patrick Mahomes scores 23 DraftKings points, yeah, I would have felt pretty good about where Tyreek would have been. If I had told you that the Rams went on the road, put up 30 points, you probably would have felt pretty good, especially looking at Cooper Kupp's score. You probably would have felt pretty good about Matthew Stafford's score. Just another thing that shows you the variance in this game that we play. We've seen it a lot with quarterbacks this year, though. Teams putting up 30 points, starting quarterbacks ending under 10 fantasy points.
Yeah, especially with the Rams-Vikings, that game combined for 53 points. So it ultimately wasn't that close. You know, the Vikings scored some points late in that game, but you know, there was points scored on both sides. So you would have thought Matthew Stafford would have wound up with a good game there. Let's wrap up our cash game discussion here with my cash lineup. And I squeak by here, 141.04. I had Justin Herbert to Keenan Allen. And then I had James Robinson, Justin Jackson, and Ronald Jones at running back and flex. I had Cooper Kupp, Antonio Brown, Cole Kmet filling out the wide receiver and tight end spots. And then I had the Falcons DST. I wound up fading Alexander Mattison, which was very scary, I have to admit. Like, at the time all was happening, I was just like, I don't want to do this ever again. This is just, it's very scary. I liked each running back a lot. I ultimately just went with the savings. I went with the cheapest guys here. And in hindsight, I think, you know, the correct move was maybe swapping off Keenan Allen and Cole Kmet to go down to Josh Palmer and up to Mark Andrews. Again, it's easy to say it now when you see, you know, Palmer scores that late touchdown, but as well as he's played any time one of Keenan Allen or Mike Williams is out at that price tag, I think just in hindsight, it makes more sense to maybe spend down that wide receiver and play an elite tight end like Mark Andrews right now. Just the way that he's performing, it's unreal. 115 plus yards and a touchdown in 3 straight games, 8 plus targets in 8 straight games for Mark Andrews. The guy is just absolutely on fire right now. So, Sia, what do you think about maybe that decision in hindsight, spending down for Josh Palmer, moving up to a Mark Andrews, basically a 2v2 swap of Keenan Allen and Cole Kmet?
No, I like how you did it. I mean, I think you could. I think it's 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. I think we all expected, especially if Houston was going to put up points, Keenan Allen to have a great game. And Josh Palmer would have been a good play if you needed the money, but you didn't really. You got the chalky running backs. You got the volume-ridden receivers. It just happened to not work out for Keenan Allen. Obviously, it worked out for you because this line cashed. But I don't have a problem with you paying down for Kmet and paying up for Keenan Allen. Obviously, everybody wants Andrews, but again, you know, there is some, you know, when you have another new quarterback for Andrews, you know, there is some potential issue there with Josh Johnson being in there. So I don't think it was a must play in cash. Let's put it that way.
All right. Mark Andrews priced all the way up to 7,400 now over on DraftKings, and rightfully so. I mean, just how great he's been playing. We'll see if Lamar Jackson can make it back here for the Baltimore Ravens in week 17. And normally we save the Are You Serious segment for later on in the show. But, you know, while we're talking about this lineup that I had, Justin Herbert, Keenan Allen, Justin Jackson. I had three Chargers in my lineup here. And that's going to lead me into Are You Serious for week 16.
You serious?
All right, so the Chargers enter week 16 as a double-digit favorite against the 3-11 Houston Texans. They proceeded to give up 41 points, two interceptions by Justin Herbert, including a pick six in this game against the Houston Texans defense. And I understand no Joey Bosa for the Chargers. They were dealing with a COVID situation and injuries to their defense. Everyone's dealing with that right now. But want to give credit to the Houston Texans, Davis Mills, Rex Burkhead. Those guys played amazing in this spot, but just what an absolute choke job by the Chargers. You know, frankly, we were lucky to get what we did out of Justin Herbert in this game. You know, like, he throws that pick six. I'm like, all right, I'm done. I'm out of the money everywhere. He turns out like, okay, he throws a touchdown late there, but just an absolute choke job by the Los Angeles Chargers. So that is my Are You Serious moment of the week. Sia, what grinded your gears this past week? What was a tilting moment for you?
Yeah, nice Peter Griffin reference with grinding your gears, by the way, for you young ones at home. You know, it's got to be Matthew Stafford. You know, usually I go sort of off the rails with my pick here, but I don't know how you go into Minnesota with the way, you know, Minnesota doesn't have like a lot of their significant pass rushing talent. They're out, Danielle Hunter, Griffin out. The secondary is just really just kind of a mess, like a lot of secondaries are. I don't know how you go into that game under good conditions and you throw one touchdown and three interceptions and your completion percentage is not even close to 60%. It's just one of those weird things where, you know, a lot, and it's probably going to be popular, right? Because everybody was on Matthew Stafford. Cup and ended up making it there, but Stafford certainly didn't. And I don't get it. I don't know if that's just a lack of preparation or what, because there's just no reason for him to have played that poorly, in my opinion.
And some of those interceptions were bad, Sia, like really bad throws too.
What's really interesting about Stafford, I think he believes in his arm like a little bit too much. And I noticed it even a couple weeks ago when he made what people called amazing throws with no window. And I remember looking at those throws when I was looking at tape, just kind of going back and being like, yeah, that's amazing. But the percentage chance that that throw was going to make it through that window was so low. It's just not a throw you should make. And I think Stafford is getting a little too, I don't know, brazen or cocky. I don't know what word you want to use, but he doesn't need to make some of these throws and he's just making them anyway. And that's, I think, part of the problem.
Yeah, especially when you have receivers like Cooper Kupp and Odell Beckham who are such good route runners. They create separation. They can get open. You don't really need to force the issue when you have receivers like that. And now I know that they're dealing with an injury to Darrell Henderson, but Sony Michel is running really well. And they're about to get back Cam Akers, which is just completely mind-boggling. So we'll see if he plays, how much he actually plays, what he can contribute. But it seems like the Rams are set up pretty well. They don't really need to rely on Matthew Stafford to do as much as he's done the past couple of weeks. Mike, how about you? Are you serious? What was a tilting moment for you here in week 16?
Probably the Tyreek situation, just how little he was involved. I really thought he'd be out there on the field more. So I'll give it an are you serious there. I thought I was going to have a really, really, really strong day. I was banking on 20 fantasy points from him going into the afternoon. Didn't get there. And then I guess the other one would be the Bengals not having enough T. Higgins or any T. Higgins after loving the game so much. All in on Ja'Marr Chase, which really hurt.
Yeah, it's such an interesting feeling, too, when you recommend something and you just don't do it yourself, because we've all done it a million times, right? Yeah. Whether it's on this show, you know, I host the baseball podcast as well. And there'll be players that I tell people, draft this guy, love this player. And then I just don't even take my own advice. And it's like, all right, I'm happy I'm helping other people win, but I want to win too. So why don't I just take my own advice? So I think it's just like this really interesting dynamic where maybe we just need to listen to ourselves a little bit more here. And let's move on to our GPP lineups. And what do you need to win big? You know what you needed. You needed the Bengals. Joe Burrow, 500 yards, 4 touchdowns. And I didn't realize this until I was watching Sunday Night Football, and they usually play this montage with a bunch of different post-game interview clips from different players. And I didn't realize beforehand that the defensive coordinator for the Ravens basically called out Joe Burrow and said something like, you know, don't put him in the Hall of Fame yet. Let's, you know, see what this kid could actually do. Well, I think you probably lit a fire where you shouldn't have, Ravens. So Joe Burrow, I think he was listening, 500 yards, 4 touchdowns. Joe Mixon, 135 total yards, 2 touchdowns. We actually mentioned him on Thursday's podcast as a contrarian running back as well. T. Higgins, 12 receptions, 194 yards, 2 touchdowns. Mark Andrews was amazing. Also want to show some love to Damian Harris, who had 3 touchdowns for the Patriots. Rex Burkhead, a monster game. He was very cheap. Amon-Ra St. Brown, no Jared Goff, no problem. This guy, he's a good player, man. He's like a legit good player. So we could talk more about him, regardless of who the quarterback is. Although I think I saw that Jared Goff is back for the Lions. So that's actually a good thing for him. And then David Montgomery. Montgomery's target share, his usage in the red zone the past month has been amazing. So I'm sure we'll talk about him as a potential option this upcoming week as well. Tia, let's start with this monster lineup that you put up. 232.9. I look back at all of the screenshots that we have from this entire season. I have a folder with all of them on my computer. This is the most points of any lineup that we have displayed on a podcast this entire season. What can we say about Sian? He's just the best.
Here's the deal. I'm the best there is, plain and simple. I mean, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence.
All right, so what happened here in this lineup? Joe Burrow, double stack with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. Mark Andrews on the bring back. You dodged James Robinson. You went with Justin Jackson, Ronald Jones, and Alexander Mattison. Of course, you had Antonio Brown in your other wide receiver spot, the Falcons DST. You finished 9th in this contest, but let's do a little bit of surgery here and try and figure out, how do you get to the top, Sia? What can you do differently to take this down? Is it swapping off of Mattison? Is it playing a wide receiver in that spot who maybe has a little bit more upside? What do you think? How do you get to the top of this contest here?
Well, the answer was pretty easy because I was tracking it. I was in first place for quite a while during the 1 o'clock slate for the winner got, I think, 6,000. And then I dropped to 3,000. And then I dropped to, you know, around 9th place where I sat ultimately. And it was because of two things. One in particular, Damian Harris. The winner had Damian Harris, and the winner had, I believe, the Eagles defense. So I'm not really going to whine about the defense much. I mean, obviously, I could have played a less chalky defense. Eagles certainly made sense. A lot of defenses made sense, but it was the Damian Harris play. So what happened was, this guy got off one of the chalk running backs and he inserted Damian Harris, who frankly I hadn't really considered because I wasn't 100% sure what his injury status was until Saturday night, Sunday morning. And so it was just one of those things. I knew Ramondre Stevenson was out, but I wasn't 100% sure Harris was fully healthy. So he ended up being such a smash play against the Bills. And that was really it. Aside from that, I mean, obviously I could have played Tyler Boyd instead of Ja'Marr Chase, but like that's the type of hindsight that like really doesn't make any sense. I mean, let's be honest about Boyd. He only got 4 targets. He caught all of them and 2 of them happened to be touchdowns. So it's not like Boyd was all of a sudden getting more targets than Ja'Marr Chase. He just happened to be the beneficiary of a really terrible secondary that receivers were just running right through. So the answer to your question is, come off one. If you're going to play 3 chalky running backs, you know, it's fine in cash. It might be fine in GPP too. But if you really want to make yourself different and you know there's 3 or 4 really chalky running backs, maybe play 2 of them, but like definitely come off at least one of them with somebody like a Damian Harris, for example, that's going to be a lot less popular.
Was this a single entry build to you?
It was a 3 max.
3 max. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was just thinking about it. If you're playing GPPs, me personally, you know, when we have this much chalk running backs, like this value available, I would probably just play 2 of them and try and get different somewhere else. And, you know, maybe it's, you know, trying to get different with your stack, but ultimately like Burrow 10%, T. Higgins 9%, Mark Andrews 7%. I mean, that's all really good. That works out there. So I think it's exactly what you said. Maybe you drop off Mattison to a Damian Harris that frees up, you know, $1,000 right there. And then you just spend up for some kind of defense that manages to go off. But it's honestly really hard to know beforehand, you know, which defense is actually going to go off there.
One thing to point out though, because this really is like 2020 hindsight. The reality is, regardless of, let's just say Damian Harris, instead of getting 3 touchdowns, he got 2, just for the sake of argument. Cause I think that's a more realistic scenario than him actually getting 3 touchdowns against the Bills. If Ja'Marr Chase gets some of that Tyler Boyd, you know, touchdown work, then I just vault right up to first place if Damian Harris doesn't completely go off. So my point in saying that is, you're right, my stack was relatively contrarian relative to the Matt Stafford and Cooper Kupp stacks, things of that nature. So this stack with Andrews only commanding 7% ownership, it absolutely could have got there with three super chalky running backs. The problem was, for whatever reason, Ja'Marr Chase didn't enjoy some of that touchdown equity that we thought was built into a game script like this. I mean, that's really what it came down to. If Ja'Marr Chase catches one of those long Boyd touchdowns, this might be a first place lineup.
Mike, what do you think about this lineup, and what would you potentially do differently to try and get all the way up to that top spot?
Yeah, no, the lineup is beautiful. The only thing I would do in tournaments, and I think we've talked about it a few times now, if you're going to play multiple chalk running backs, I think my favorite way to just get a little different is handcuff them with one of the defenses. Obviously, the best one in this case would have been the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Probably would have forced you different on Madison or someone else in the lineup based on salary. But that's typically what I would recommend. If you're in a tournament getting into situations like that, I think that defense is where you want to differentiate yourself and not get off of those good chalk plays that you really like, or the stack that you like, frankly. Well, all you basically have is the stack that you love with the chalk players mixed in, which is what I do every week, what I recommend everyone should do every week, frankly. So yeah, beautiful, beautiful lineup. I really think you should have taken it down. And I think out of all of the things that happened, the Damian Harris game was the most unlikely to happen.
All right. Mike, let's move on to your GPP lineup here. 160.76 in a fun, unique lineup. Josh Johnson to Mark Andrews. You have Ja'Marr Chase on the bring back. You have Justin Jackson and Ronald Jones at running back. You have Tyreek Hill and Antonio Brown at your other wide receiver spots. You have Rob Gronkowski at tight end. So you have Gronk and Mark Andrews in the same lineup. We haven't talked about this before. I feel like we've talked about dual tight ends. We've talked about, you know, maybe spend down for one tight end and then using that wide receiver-esque tight end like a Mark Andrews or a Kelsey in your flex spot. We haven't really talked about potentially spending up for two different tight ends and treating them both as wide receivers. So I really like this construction. We talked a lot about Tyreek Hill. He just wasn't healthy enough. Gronk didn't come through, but I thought it was really unique paying up for two different tight ends here.
Yeah, no, I liked it a lot. It's obviously because of Johnson at quarterback that I was able to do that. I basically said Mark Andrews is not a tight end for me right now. He's a wide receiver, so I was able to throw him in. But it's really the combination of, you know, I had Justin Jackson in every single lineup, had Ronald Jones in all but one, was playing those guys no matter what. And then you throw in the $4,000 quarterback, you've got money to spend elsewhere. I had Antonio Brown in every single lineup. I had Tyreek Hill in every single lineup. Because I had Johnson, I needed Chase on the bring back for Mark Andrews. So that's just kind of the way everything fell there. Seahawks defense, pretty simple here. I'm kind of stunned they gave up so many points at 25. Really liked them here. It was snowing, a lot of terrible conditions to play football. New quarterback Nick Foles getting injected into the system in a road game in one of the environments that still creates a home field advantage in the league. I was very pleased when lineups locked to see the ownership percentage on that one at the same time of having Tyreek Hill about to start, but didn't obviously come through for me. Was able to cash, of course, but not what I was hoping for when lineups were locking for the second set of games.
I don't know when I missed this, by the way. You're talking about Seattle and one of the biggest just home field advantages in football. When did they change their name to Lumen Field? They're talking about snow and Lumen Field. I'm like, where is that? What is a Lumen Field? So I don't know. It's something I used to be pretty good at, like keeping track of the names of stuff. But I don't know. It feels like things are just changing so often now. And now Staples Center is like crypto.com arena. It's kind of hard to keep up with all these like name changes. But yeah, it was just a completely random thought that I had. The last thing that we'll look at here is my GPP lineup, a single entry that I made, and it put up 168.58 here. Stafford to Cooper Kupp with Justin Jefferson on the bring back. I faded Alexander Mattison in this lineup. I had Justin Jackson and Ronald Jones at running back, and where I got different was I had a mini stack in that Bills-Patriots game that included Damian Harris and Emmanuel Sanders, which I really liked. Jared Cook at tight end, and I paid up for the Eagles DST, which put up 16 points. So I specifically wanted to show this lineup because I was really happy with the Harris pivot off of James Robinson. The fact that it came through, you know, I didn't project that he was going to score three touchdowns. And obviously, he ran super hot there. What was so frustrating was that everything set up so well for Emmanuel Sanders in this spot. Mm-hmm. Josh Allen threw for 314 yards, three touchdowns. Sanders was on the field for 82% of the snaps. He led the team in routes run. No Cole Beasley, no Gabriel Davis in this spot. turns out to be Isaiah McKenzie, who goes off for 11 catches, over 100 yards, a touchdown. So I wanted to show off this lineup because I thought it was interesting. I still really like the build. It was similar to your previous lineup, Mike. It was, you know, it was a min cash, but overall, I was pretty happy with the construction and how things turned out here. So, Sia, what do you think? Yeah, honestly, if we just combined our lineups here, if I gave you a little bit of mine, you gave me a little bit of yours, then we potentially have a takedown here. But what do you think of this lineup?
Yeah, I'll trade you Alexander Mattison for Damian Harris. That works. I think this is a great lineup. I also thought Emmanuel Sanders was a pretty good play last week. So pretty surprised. I mean, it makes sense that as Isaiah McKenzie was worked in as well, but 12 targets compared to Stephon Diggs's 13, and Emmanuel Sanders only had 3. I mean, it's pretty crazy. Now, Emmanuel Sanders did kind of drop a touchdown pass that was, you know, behind him. Maybe if he catches that, he gets worked in even a little bit more. And of course, he gets points from that as well. So the upside was there. I mean, obviously, we think it's Isaiah McKenzie season now as opposed to Emmanuel Sanders. But I like that play. I certainly like the Damian Harris play. Jared Cook made sense given who was out. I love this lineup.
Mike, what do you think here? Is there anything that you would do differently? Obviously, the Stafford to Cup stack is very chalky there. Get Justin Jefferson on the bring back. And I needed the Bengals, you know, so in hindsight, you talk about that. But anything else here that you might do differently?
No, not really. The only one player I didn't really care for was Jared Cook, but I totally get it. They were shorthanded, and I went the route of Palmer, which ultimately saved me because I liked Emmanuel Sanders, but I couldn't quite get to Emmanuel Sanders because Palmer was cheaper. And because I had Palmer, I obviously wasn't on Jared Cook. But the only thing that I would have, like, ahead of time said, hey, I don't like Jared Cook, but that's basically it. Everyone else definitely has the upside, and we talked about the Stafford situation, just a game where he likely has 50% of the points that he should.
Yep. All right. Well, I wanted to show that one and remind everyone, there's only a few weeks left here with the main slates. We have our FFT DFS contest, which you can join as always here in week 17. The link will be in the podcast and the YouTube description. Of course, it is $5 to join. There are 150 entries, and the top 15 gets paid out. So again, if you want to play against Sia, Mike, and myself, you can find it in the podcast and YouTube description. And I want to give a shout out to the winner of this contest this past week, B. Bucky, who scored 216 points. He wins $135, takes down the contest. Joe Burrow to T. Higgins and Jamar Chase. He has the double stack. Mark Andrews on the bring back. Alexander Mattison and Rojo at running back. Amon-Ra St. Brown. Again, the guy is absolutely balling right now. 26 points on DraftKings at 7% ownership in our contest. Laquon Treadwell in the flex, another solid floor of 9.4, which is actually scary because if this guy played, or girl, played Josh Palmer, could have scored even more points, but Laquon Treadwell is fine, and he continues to be fine, and wraps up the lineup here with the Broncos DST. See, I really like this lineup, and I like the fact that this person went with Amon-Ra St. Brown. It's risky, obviously, you know, knowing the quarterback situation, but that's partially the reason why this lineup won.
I love it. He had the same double stack I did, which I like double stacking anyway, especially in a game where I think there's going to be a lot of points scored. And I obviously picked, you know, Chase and Higgins as well. So obviously he played, you know, a couple of the chalk running backs, Mark Andrews. Treadwell is fine. I mean, I think week to week, he is really the most consistent option seeing targets. We've seen Marvin Jones kind of emerge, especially last game with a ton of targets. So kind of look out for that. But I like the lot. I didn't have the guts to play Amon-Ra St. Brown because I thought I was kind of chasing. Now we've come to the conclusion that he's just kind of here to stay and he's just going to get a ton of volume. I'll tell you this, though. The one mistake I really made, if you wanted a piece of that Kansas City game, but you didn't want to pay up for Tyreek Hill, obviously you couldn't play Travis Kelce. Byron Pringle was kind of like an easy, low-cost play. And I'm a Pringle guy. You guys know how I feel about Mecole Hardman and his receiver skills or lack thereof. Like, Pringle made so much sense in terms of just getting a piece of that game, knowing that Kelce wasn't going to be there. And maybe other targets who are going to be leaned on. If you know, I think Pringle scored 25 fantasy points. So if you put Pringle in that lineup instead of Treadwell, that's the point I'm making. Or frankly, Pringle in any of our lineups, that would have made a lot of sense and it would have opened up a lot more cash. But I love the lineup. Great job, B. Bucky.
Yeah, and you know what's so interesting about that Byron Pringle call? I had him in a lot of lineups, and then once Mike Williams tested positive, I pivoted everything from Byron Pringle to Josh Palmer, which Palmer was still fine, but Byron Pringle goes out and he scores two touchdowns. And what's interesting on another level is that every week I write this article for CBSSports.com basically talking about the main things that I'm looking at when constructing DFS lineups. And I gave out a lineup on the bottom, and it was Joe Burrow, Ronald Jones, Justin Jackson, Cooper Kupp, Jamar Chase, Antonio Brown, Mark Andrews, Byron Pringle, Chargers DST. So it was a good lineup. It didn't have T. Higgins, but man, if you
that's a great lineup.
If you listen to that, then yeah, you probably made some money. So if you had the conviction to stick with Byron Pringle, obviously it worked out there. I do have an update on the Don. His sneaky picks last week, I think they were Treadwell and Tyler Johnson. Treadwell was fine. Tyler Johnson, zero. Donut. I don't even know if he was on the field, honestly. Where was he? Where was the guy? He did not catch a single thing. He didn't cash in this contest this past week. I did. I finished third overall, finally cashed. Very excited about that happening. Even with the Chargers DST in my lineup, they gave me negative 3 points. I don't want to talk about the Chargers anymore. But he eliminated me. The Don did from our season-long home league playoffs. So shout out to him. He goes on to the championship, and I'm left playing for third place. Thanks, Dad. Appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, early Week 17 pricing here on Fantasy Football Today DFS.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
All right, so let's jump into week 17. We have a 14-game main slate with no Thursday night football, no Saturday games either. We do have one game with a total over 50 points as of now. That is the Cardinals at the Cowboys, which sits at 51.5 points, according to Caesar Sportsbook. The Chiefs and Bengals just under that at 49 points. We have four double-digit spreads as of now. The Bills minus 14.5 against the Falcons. The Pats laying 15.5 hosting the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Bucks are 13-point favorites at the Jets, and the 49ers are 12.5-point favorites at home against the Houston Texans, and that is without Jimmy Garoppolo, which we will talk about in just a second. COVID situations. I mentioned a record 106 NFL players placed on the COVID list on Monday, more players being added to that list on Tuesday. The biggest names as of now include Carson Wentz, who is unvaccinated, which likely means he's going to be out here in week 17. Mike Evans, also dealing with a hamstring injury. He was placed on the COVID list. Josh Reynolds and Julio Jones were also placed there as well. And it sounds like we're going to have some more names to talk about on Thursday's pod. Unfortunately, the actual injuries that we need to address: Jimmy G has a thumb injury. Trey Lance is set to start. He is $4,800 on DraftKings and will be very popular, specifically in cash games. James Robinson tore his Achilles. Dare Ogunbowale is the next man up there. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has a collarbone injury and is week to week. Jordan Howard, that is not correct. Miles Sanders broke his hand and will not play in week 17. Jordan Howard is dealing with a neck injury, a stinger, so we'll see if he can get on the field. Jarrell Henderson sent to the IR. It is the Sony Michel show. It has been, and it will continue to be so. Though Cam Akers, again, he has a chance to play in week 17. He tore his Achilles in July. This is unprecedented territory. I mean, we're talking about 5 months this man is attempting to return from a torn Achilles. I don't think it's very smart, but they have medical professionals. They have doctors who are telling them what he can or can't do. And I'm sure he's telling them as well. So we'll see what happens if Cam Akers can actually play or not. Let's start at the quarterback position. Josh Allen is 8K on DraftKings. He's 8,800 over on FanDuel. He's the highest priced quarterback on both sites going up against the Atlanta Falcons. There are five other quarterbacks at 7K or higher on DraftKings: Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Kyler Murray, Matthew Stafford, and Lamar Jackson. Mike, how do you feel about these higher price options? How do you feel about Trey Lance as well down at 4,800?
Trey Lance is definitely going to show up in optimizers as the quarterback this week. At the top, I think Josh Allen is super interesting just because of what he does in that offense. I don't think many people are going to end up playing him at that price point with the other options. Like Patrick Mahomes, again, in this spot, I think it'll most likely be Lance, Mahomes, and then for me, the third quarterback I'll be using will be Sam Ellinger if he is indeed the starter for the Indianapolis Colts. He has the ability to run the football just a little bit, like Taysom Hill. Not saying he's Taysom Hill by any means, but in this matchup, I do like him a little bit at 4,500.
All right. Two others that we haven't mentioned yet. Joe Burrow, of course, coming off that massive game. He is 6,900 in that game going up against the Kansas City Chiefs. And Dak Prescott is 6,700. Those two quarterbacks are involved in the biggest totals here on the slate. Sia, what do you think about Burrow? What do you think about Dak? Any other higher priced quarterbacks? If you have a thought on Trey Lance, who are your favorites at the quarterback position?
Yeah, I'll start with Trey Lance. He's definitely going to be a cash game option for me, unless the news changes. At 4,800, it's really hard to pass that up against the Texans defense. And it's not, I'm not necessarily fully disparaging the Texans defense, but I think there's just so much that he's going to be able to do with the running game, but also with his receivers, obviously, Debo, Ayuk, and George Kittle. So I like him quite a bit at the bottom. I like Josh Allen. He's starting to grow on me, even though this game at home against Atlanta is not really going to be much of a back and forth. I think a Josh Allen naked play or Josh Allen with Isaiah McKenzie, who is super low priced at 4,300 still, makes a ton of sense because, yeah, you're paying up for Josh Allen, but you're definitely saving with Isaiah McKenzie. Obviously, I'm you know, we'll have to narrow this field a little bit for Thursday's game-by-game breakdown, but Mahomes and Joe Burrow, it's going to be hard to pass that up, the back and forth that we're likely to see in that one. Other than that, I'll probably take a shot at Dak. I was really impressed with what he did against Washington last week. My fear for him is that they tend to not throw the ball. They certainly did last week, but the three or four games prior to that, they really weren't throwing that much. His pass attempts are way down relative to what I think the expectation was. So, you know, Dak, I kind of like, but I'm not going all in on by any means. And other than that, I do want to see how the Lamar Jackson, Huntley, Josh Johnson situation pans out. I'll keep an eye on which quarterback is playing there because you might get some relief off the Trey Lance chalk if one of those backups is playing.
Yeah, definitely going to be interested in Trey Lance as well. I think I'm leaning Josh Allen as of now when it comes to the higher priced quarterbacks. The Bills are tied for the highest implied team total so far for week 16 with the Tampa Bay Bucks. So Josh Allen, I like. Stafford, I like. Patrick Mahomes, I'm going to like as well quite a bit. Let's move on to the running back position this upcoming week. Jonathan Taylor is 9K on DraftKings. He is 10K over on FanDuel, and he is the highest priced running back on both sites. Put this guy in a bubble, whatever you need to do, because obviously there's a COVID situation going on with the Indianapolis Colts, and we cannot lose Jonathan Taylor for DFS. We definitely cannot lose him for fantasy football championships in season-long leagues. So please, Colts, do whatever you need to do to keep Jonathan Taylor out of the COVID protocols this upcoming week. Only one other running back over 8K over on DraftKings, and that includes Austin Eckler. He is 8,200 versus the Denver Broncos. Mike, how do you feel about Eckler, Jonathan Taylor, the higher priced running backs, just the running back position in general here?
Yeah, for me, it's the same blueprint as basically every week of the season. There's no chance I'm paying up for running back on this slate. There's going to be enough value on the slate. So you want to play Jonathan Taylor. I think it's fine in tournaments, but certainly not going to be part of your core cash game strategy this week, in my opinion. So no real interest there at the top yet. My favorite by far is going to be Darrell Williams of the Kansas City Chiefs. Just expect him to be heavily involved in the passing game, going to take the load of the carries. I don't expect Clyde Edwards-Helaire to play in this game. He might. He's listed week to week. I don't think they want to mess around with losing him for the rest of the season, potentially. I think that they let him rest in this one. I think they got a pretty good look at Mr. Gore in the second half of that game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. We've also had a big enough sample size of seeing him so far this year where he has been capable. I do think that Clyde Edwards-Helaire is either severely limited or is inactive for this game. So Darrell Williams, I fully expect double-digit carries, probably five targets in the passing game.
Yeah, he is 5,800 at the Cincinnati Bengals. And in the five games earlier this season, that he started without Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He averaged 18.6 touches per game, ton of targets, ton of receptions. So I definitely think he's in play at that price point. And three other early standouts in terms of value right now. David Montgomery, 6,500 going up against the New York Jets. He's priced up a little bit here, but the target share, 22% target share since week 13. That is second most among running backs in the NFL. 25 red zone opportunities since week 12. That's the most in the NFL. That's more than Jonathan Taylor. So the role for David Montgomery right now is elite. Lots of targets, lots of red zone opportunities. Ronald Jones, if Leonard Fournette is out again this week, Rashad Penny, all of a sudden playing really well. 6,100 going up against the Detroit Lions, 135 or more rushing yards in two of his last three games. And then Sony Michel, 5,800. He's at the Ravens, 20 plus touches in four straight games. Sia, do you have a favorite of these maybe value standouts, or are you looking to maybe spend up at the running back position?
You know, I got to see how things shake out in Indianapolis, particularly with the offensive line, if I'm going to even consider Jonathan Taylor. But I totally agree with Mike. You know, sometimes I do pay up for running backs, unlike Mike. But this week, I mean, the running back that really jumped out at me was David Montgomery, because he was priced up a little bit. Because I think that $6,500 price tag is going to intimidate some people, just because Montgomery is just not a sexy pick. The Bears, there's really nobody on the Bears that's really a sexy pick outside of maybe Darnell Mooney. So I think, I mean, listen, you mentioned the percentage. So let's just like break it down. Like the last four games, his targets, 9, 6, 7, and 9. I mean, those are the types of targets that you see with wide receiver ones or certainly wide receiver twos. So the target share is there, and he's getting 17 to 20 carries per game in that same time span. So you're going to go up against a bad New York Giants run defense. He makes a ton of sense. I agree with you on Rashad Penny. We know Seattle likes to run the ball. He does seem to be the bell cow guy, and he's flashing some talent that it was the talent that was the reason Seattle drafted him at the end of the first round a few years back, obviously. Sony Michel, I love, like you said, ran routes on 76% of Stafford dropbacks in week 16. And obviously with Henderson likely out, I don't think Cam Akers is going to play, by the way. But if he does, I don't see him touching the ball more than 5 or 6 times. Agree that Darrell Williams is the guy. I don't think CEH is going to play either. So I like him at 5,800. I'll mention two other guys or three other guys. Singletary at 5,400. If you wanted to just own all the points in that Buffalo game, you could play Josh Allen and Devin Singletary and know that you're getting probably most of that implied total of 30. So that's just something to point out. He does seem like the guy, and he's also getting targets as well. Dare Ogunbowale, sorry, I almost butchered that, at 5,100 at New England. It's not necessarily the best matchup, but ran 35 routes last week. He's going to catch some balls too. And the last guy I'll mention is Boston Scott. I do respect that Washington run defense still. But if Jordan Howard is out, which I expect to be, and of course Miles Sanders is out, I don't really know who they go to. It's Boston Scott or Kenny Gainwell, and they're certainly, especially in the red zone, going to be relying on Boston Scott a lot more.
Yeah, Dare Ogunbowale was one I wanted to mention as well. 5,100 at the Patriots. Obviously, it's a tough matchup. They're huge underdogs, but he had 19 touches last week, including a rushing touchdown. He can catch the ball a little bit, so we'll see what happens throughout the rest of the week and if any other value shakes out here at the running back position. Let's move over to wide receiver. No surprise, Cooper Kupp is now $9,500 over on DraftKings. He is $10,200 on FanDuel. He is the highest priced player overall on both sites. Two other wide receivers over 8K. That includes Deebo Samuel at 8,700 going up against the Texans and Tyreek Hill at 8,300 at the Cincinnati Bengals. Mike, I assume you're going to be spending up for wide receivers this week. The question is, which ones?
All the target monsters will be a repeat of last week for me mostly. I can tell you Antonio Brown will be in 100% of lineups. He's way too cheap. He's at least $2,000 too cheap in the current role. So he will be in there. Cooper Kupp, I will try my best to get him in. But right now, Tyreek Hill. Love, love, love Tyreek Hill in this spot. Those will be my core guys. I got lineups right now where I'm sitting here with Tyreek, Antonio Brown, Cooper Kupp as the three main wide receivers of the lineup. All paid down for Byron Pringle. And then the other wide receiver, obviously Ja'Marr Chase, Higgins, Boyd, I think they're all in play in that game. But the one that I want to talk about a little bit is A.J. Brown. This Dolphins defense likes to play man coverage. I think that A.J. Brown has the ability to get loose against that secondary. So I think A.J. Brown, no one's going to play him really at 7,200 just because he's in between Chase and just where the price tag is, the low total on the game. I think this is a sneaky good spot for AJ Brown in tournaments.
I absolutely love it. 16 targets last week, 11 receptions, 145 yards, and a touchdown. Mentioned Julio Jones. I believe Nick Westbrook-Ikhina was also placed on the COVID list, so we don't know if they're going to be available for the Titans this week. And if not, that all but guarantees double-digit targets for AJ Brown in this game. And again, with that kind of volume, The upside is absolutely massive for AJ Brown. I do like Stephon Diggs quite a bit as well, 7,900. If you just want to lock up that entire implied team total and you want to take Josh Allen with Diggs and Devin Singletary, I don't think it's crazy to do that. You're going to have to find some value somewhere else, but I do like Diggs quite a bit as well. T. Higgins and Jalen Waddle both priced up quite a bit, 6,900 and 6,700 respectively, but it is warranted the way that both of those guys are playing right now, Higgins and Waddle. Early value plays. Antonio Brown, again, makes a ton of sense. Christian Kirk, I like quite a bit. 9 targets again last week. He's 5,800 in that game against the Cowboys. And Josh Palmer, it sounds like Mike Williams is not going to be eligible again to play this upcoming week. And Palmer is 3,600 in that game against the Denver Broncos. So, yeah, what are you thinking about the wide receiver position?
There's a lot to like at the wide receiver position. And again, once we do our game-by-game breakdown, perhaps we're going to kind of narrow the field here a little bit. I do like Kupp. I mean, obviously, you know, when you're looking at the Baltimore defense, and that's who the Rams play, I mean, a Stafford to Kupp combo makes a lot of sense. I think, however, if you want to do a stack with Stafford, I don't think it's out of the question to actually, this is GPPs only, to actually avoid Kupp and pair Stafford with Odell and Van Jefferson. I think that's the type of thing that like could make the stack a little bit different. Or obviously you could do it with Kupp and one of those two guys. But Odell Beckham and Van Jefferson ran the same number of routes as Cooper Kupp last week. So they're on the field a lot. They're seeing basically as many snaps. And obviously Kupp is the target monster. But I'm just saying, if you wanted to do that stack and you wanted to get different, maybe you include one of those two guys or both of those guys in your stack. Just something to keep in the back of your mind. Totally agree on Antonio Brown. I was going to say Michael Pittman until Carson Wentz got ruled out. I still think Michael Pittman could be in play if he ends up being slightly contrarian. But and that's only because he's got 40% of the target share over the last 4 weeks. I mean, he is the guy that they're throwing to. Agree on Josh Palmer. I think Rashad Bateman is an interesting guy to just throw out there because he was actually second in snaps behind Marquise Brown last week as far as the receivers go. I mentioned Marvin Jones. That's just a flyer against New England. I don't love it, but it's something, you know, if you wanted to get different, I like it. I mentioned Isaiah McKenzie. Pringle, again, is priced really low at 40. He's priced up, but he's still only 4,100. He's somebody to consider. And then just a couple of flyers I'll just throw out there. Again, this is GPPs just to get different. Zay Jones is 3,900 at Indy. Now, that game flow might be a lot different now that Carson Wentz is out, so take that for what it's worth. And I do want to mention this guy, GPP Dart in a big field tournament. I mentioned Philip Dorsett last week, and if you recall, before he got injured in the third quarter, he had already seen 6 targets. He was on his way to really, really paying off. Chris Conley probably steps in those shoes in terms of like the ADOTs and just kind of the longer routes. So somebody to consider at 3,900 against San Francisco, where they're going to be playing comeback ball a majority of the game. Again, it's a dart, but he caught 3 of 3 targets last week and had a touchdown.
Van Jefferson, I just wanted to follow up on that. He's 5,300 on DraftKings. He has 29 receiving yards over the last 2 weeks, and I think that will push a lot of people away from him. So yeah, if you're trying to get different and maybe fade Cooper Kupp at your own risk, you can play Van Jefferson and Odell Beckham instead of him. Tight end position, we have Mark Andrews all the way up to 7,400 now over on DK, 8,700 on FanDuel. He is the highest priced tight end on both sites here, and Travis Kelce is 7,300. We have George Kittle at 7,100. So this is the first time in a while, I feel like all three of those big three tight ends are active, hopefully healthy. Travis Kelce, we'll see if he gets back, and on the same main slate together. I feel like it's been a really long time since we've seen all three of these guys back here together. Kyle Pitts is 5,900. Just wanted to call him out because he went over 100 yards, first time since week 7. So it seems like he's getting more involved again now here for the Atlanta Falcons. Not really much in terms of punting at the position that I see as of now. Cole Kmet, he was fine last week. He's still just 3,400. He has 5+ targets in 5 straight games, but not really much. Mike, how do you feel about the tight end position? Is it one that you are maybe looking to spend up at?
I will be in tournaments for sure. So I mentioned a ton of Antonio Brown. I'm going to have a lot of Rob Gronkowski in tournaments. I think it's a really good buy low spot. They're obviously still beat up at the wide receiver positions. the focus is going to easily have shifted to Antonio Brown. Now they are playing the Jets. Antonio Brown is one of the best receivers in the NFL. He's still going to get his, but I do think it's a really good buy low spot on Gronk now that he is in that middling price point, 6,200, not a super value play by any means, but certainly a discount from Mark Andrews, who also is going to have a significant amount of attention from Sean McVay and that team. So I like Gronk a lot in tournaments. Cash games right now, it's CJ Uzoma for the Cincinnati Bengals. I really like his involvement. I think it's going to be a competitive game. No matter the game script, we've kind of seen that the Bengals are going to throw the football with Joe Burrow. I like that a lot. You look at his price point, 3,300. You look at all of the numbers here. He hasn't had, you know, he's had multiple targets in every game. Like, he hasn't had that game where he just doesn't get a target, which is something I really love to see when I'm looking at a value tight end like this. So at 3,300 on a week where it's spend up for Mark Andrews or play someone middling, I like it here because at worst I'm projecting a competitive game and most likely I'm projecting them to be trailing by 10 points.
Over the past 4 weeks for the Bengals, CJ Uzoma has a 17% target share, which is very healthy for the tight end position. So yeah,
in a game, $3,300, yeah, very healthy.
Yeah, especially in a game, you know, against the Chiefs, could be chasing points, really big total overall in this game. Yeah, I think that's a good call out for CJ Uzoma. Stia, what are we looking at here for the tight end position in week 17?
Totally agree. CJ Uzoma is a guy I'm going to be jamming in because of the price. And it's not like it's a lock button for me or anything, but yeah, 7 targets last week. He's getting high quality targets. I mean, it almost seems like they're scheming him to get open because a lot of the times he's just floating on a short crossing route while everybody's chasing, you know, the three big receivers. So I like Uzoma a lot. I think Gerald Everett is interesting at 4,100 home against Detroit. He's starting to see, you know, the last few weeks, you know, almost as many targets as your Tyler Lockett's, your DK Metcalf. So I think that's definitely a kind of a boom or bust option. As far as paying up, there's two guys I like, and I'm not talking about the elite guys. I'm talking about paying up in the 5K range. Dawson Knox, listen, you can't play everybody on the Bills. We've basically mentioned every pass catcher and even the running backs. I include Josh Allen as a running back there too. So Knox, though, at 5,500, if you think he is going to get the ball, he led all tight ends in routes run in week 16 and with 46. So, I mean, he's basically functioning as, you know, the Mike Gesicki's of the world, you know, the guys we talk about as essentially slot receivers. And another guy that's doing that at 5,200 is Zach Ertz. 24 targets in the last two games is just a monster number. And he ran 42 routes last week, which amounted to 95% of Kyler Murray's dropback. So he's clearly being leaned on, especially with DeAndre Hopkins out. He's probably, especially in that game against Dallas, my favorite tight end in terms of just from a value standpoint at 5,200.
All right. So we have tight ends at each price point. You want to spend up, you want to hit the mid tier, you want to spend down. You got your CJ Uzoma, your Cole Kmet level tight ends there as well. And that's, we're going to wrap up for Sia and Mike. I am Frank Daigle for listening and watching Fantasy Football Today. DFS will be back again on Thursday to deep dive the entire week 17 main slate. We will see you there.